Welcome to the Marketing Millennials, the No BS Marketing Podcast. I'm Daniel Murray, and join me for unfiltered conversations with the brains behind marketing's coolest companies. The one request I tell our guests, stories or it didn't happen. Get ready to turn the f*** up.
The landscape is just so packed. I walk into like a Sephora and where do I even shop? Where do I look? Where do I go? Every single celebrity has a beauty brand. And so every influencer has a beauty brand. And so they're happy. You have to find a way to stand out, and it can't just be on a celebrity name any longer. That market is going to dissipate at a certain point for the sort of super fans that are just shopping there because they love the celebrity that's selling it.
At a time when every platform is flooded with content, making your brand stand out from the crowd doesn't have to be as hard as you might think. With Artlist, you can get everything you need to make memorable videos. Access a catalog of the highest quality music, sound effects, footage, and template. And it's all covered by a license tailored to your business. Go to artlist.io to boost your brand. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Marketing Millennials. Today, I have a really cool guest on, and I'll let her introduce herself. But Stephanie, she's head of marketing at Staud, one of my wife's favorite bands ever. So this is really cool for me because, and my wife is just like fangirling about the brand. So it's always cool to have someone who a brand my wife loves on the podcast. But I want to get into, Stephanie, how did you get into marketing?
Yeah, you're going to win some cool points there. You just have to buy her a bag or something now. I have always been like pretty enamored with fashion and beauty. I've worked in luxury retail almost my entire career. I was the kid that grew up on a farm in the middle of New Hampshire, tearing pages out of Vogue magazines and wearing like my mom's 90s blazers to high school when I was 15 years old. And so I was always just kind of obsessed and enamored with fashion and cosmetics and fragrance. And I actually got the opportunity when I was a junior in high school that summer to go live in New York City and take college classes for high school students at FIT. And I actually focused on cosmetics marketing. And I just fell like madly in love with it. And I think there was just like a huge customer piece that I was really infatuated with. And at the time I was really in love with makeup and how it made me feel and getting dressed up. And then I ended up going to college in New York City and I specialized in fashion retail there on the marketing and communication side and focused in luxury brand marketing pretty young while I was still in college. And I was just kind of obsessed with customers and I loved the product and I really loved the aspiration and what drove people to make choices about shopping with certain brands. So I started my career at Chanel, which was just kind of like a masterclass, obviously, in luxury brand marketing. And I was in New York for about 13 years, and now I'm in LA. I moved out here like 2 years ago for an awesome role with Savage X Fenty as their VP of growth. And then I've been at Staud for the last year or so, like 14 months, as their head of growth and marketing. And it's been a fun ride.
I know you know a lot about tastemakers, celebrity brands. So I want to first go into what brands are just crushing it, celebrity brands are crushing it. What are they doing well? What levers are they pulling that are awesome that people can learn from? And then we'll go into, obviously, the bad side as well of that industry.
I really love when, and I think it's more like I almost find it necessary at this point because the landscape is just so saturated with so many different brands that you're like, where do I even go? Where do I choose? And so I'm kind of obsessed when a celebrity or influencer or tastemaker, whatever you want to call them, they are founding a brand that's done really well with purpose and value and a lot of passion. And I found that those brands end up impacting culture and like actually making a difference. And so I kind of feel like if you're, you know, using a celebrity or a celebrity founding a brand and you're not doing it to make an actual impact in something, or making something better or more equitable, why? What are you doing it for? What's the purpose? And so I feel like there's three brands that I'm really obsessed with in this that kind of sit in this space. Savage is definitely one of them. Re for sure. And that's not just because I worked there, although I am biased, but I think that Re totally disrupted and changed the lingerie and intimates apparel industry. It was a really archaic industry that hadn't been cracked or blown up in a while. And it was really archaic in its practices. It excluded an enormous amount of people that were sort of like allowed to wear lingerie, or it was like acceptable to wear lingerie. And she completely turned it on its head and made it feel really inclusive and sexy and empowering and so many things that a lot of people felt like they couldn't feel with the current sort of scope of where the intimates apparel industry was sitting and how they were marketing and who they were using in their marketing. So I love her for that. And then the second one that I'm just so fascinated by is Goop. So I'm kind of in love with what Gwyneth and her team have done there. I feel like they've really woven their way into culture in a way that feels surprising every time something happens. They've gone from like creating really random, weird viral products to like amazing content and kind of talking about concepts on like a much deeper level, like probably things that we talk about in friend groups, but like not really otherwise. And I really kind of love that she's sort of democratized having maybe what seems as like a strange conversation in a really normal way.
So would you say that the number one thing that makes these brands successful is the purpose, mission driven, and that's what surrounds that brand? What are the key factors that you would say make these brands successful, in your opinion?
I mean, I think there's an obvious statement around like the use of the celebrity, like how included they are or how present they are, or they want to be in marketing and in the message, because it makes it feel obviously much more impactful if a voice that is really trusted in an industry or, you know, as a kind of leader can communicate that message in a way. But I think, yes, I would agree with your statement around having really effective mission values and then standing behind that and creating products, making customer decisions, making business expansion decisions, all based in that initial, the values of why you're founded. Again, I think the landscape is just so packed. I walk into like a Sephora and where do I even shop? Where do I look? Where do I go? Every single celebrity has a beauty brand. And so every influencer has a beauty brand. And so you have to find a way to stand out, and it can't just be on a celebrity name any longer. That market is going to dissipate at a certain point for the sort of super fans that are just shopping there because they love the celebrity that's selling it.
My wife has worked at like a couple of celebrity brands, and she's seen that like it's really good if you do like the initial launch, because you see the super fans come, but you also get kind of negative signal in the growth lever way, because you don't know like who actually is going to buy the product. Because like some people are just going to buy because they're super fans. They're not going to buy because they actually going to love the product. So you have to separate, hey, who are the super fans that we can retain and they'll be great and they actually love the product, versus like who are people who are actually going to love the product if we took the celebrity out of the mix, and who are going to actually continue to buy, and what are the things we can do that aren't with the celebrity? And I think that's where a lot of people lose, is when they think, oh, we'll just get the celebrity to post, or we'll get the celebrity to post. And then if the celebrity doesn't want to post that day, and you kind of just lose your growth lever for that marketing day. So it's like you can't rely on the celebrity. You have to rely on a great product, a great brand, and set up those other growth levers to make sure you're winning.
Yeah, like an awesome community. Like, are you creating community outside of just what that super fan celebrity community is? I've definitely been at businesses where it's like a drug almost. Like, we're waiting for the celebrity to post or to go live with a campaign or, you know, whatever the activation is, or for the event that they're doing that we know is going to bring an incredible halo effect to the business. And it becomes it's such a reliance and such a crutch that you have a really hard time driving business the rest of the time because you're so hyper-focused on those moments that are going to, yes, drive impact, but it's not sustainable and it's not consistent. And so once it kind of drops off, it drops off and you're scrambling to pick up what you've sort of missed out on in the meantime.
What are some of the growth levers you used when you were at celebrity brands that weren't celebrity driven? How did you set it up to have obviously the celebrity be part of the marketing strategy and the growth strategy, but not rely on them? What are some things you did?
Yeah, there's one specific brand I'm thinking about as I'm answering this. And the founder, I wouldn't call her a celebrity, but she was definitely a tastemaker. She founded the brand. She was a part of the brand. She was really involved in a lot of ways, but she definitely took a back seat. Like, she was an authority in certain cases and then sort of let the brand move on its own. I think that one of the most important things that we did as a brand was as she grew as a person, stylistically, her aesthetic, whatever it is, her family, we had to make certain really important decisions in terms of, are we going to grow with her? Is this brand going to change as she changes? So when she's in her 30s and she's wearing party girl dresses still and pink and bows, and now she's in her 40s and she has, you know, a 10-year-old and wears like the row and is wearing Campbell suits every day, are we going to then kind of shock our customer and make that right turn with her and continue to evolve with her? Or are we staying with kind of where we've been and what we've nurtured over a certain period of time? And so there were certain pivotal moments that I recall of just like big discussions around the, like, are we going to sort of go in this direction? And if we go in this direction, are we going to lose people? Probably. Are we going to price ourselves out of certain customer demographics that we've been winning with? Probably. And so it was a lot of like strategic decision making around how we aren't going to make choices to grow based on where she was as a founder and in her life.
You have to make those tough decisions when it comes to those type of things. And it's also, it's crazy because you have to figure out and weave and say, if they zig, do we zig with them or do we like stay the path and we know what's working? And it's hard to be like the head of marketing too or like the growth person at that company, because you want to stay true to the person who's the face of the brand. Some people are more involved than others in these situations, but you also know that your goal is to grow the brand, and you can't just not do that. So it's like a hard decision sometimes to be like, hey, do we want this customer market? I know it's a growth lever, but if not, we're going to have to figure a way to go up market or price ourselves up market or figure out a way to do this, figure out a way to do that. So it's such a different world than like the world I come from, because it's so culture and what people are talking about driven, where it's like, I come from like, hey, let's put money into Facebook and like here and here and then let's build a brand because nobody knows who we are. But this is like strategically saying, oh, I have this like celebrity halo or tastemaker halo, but I also have other ways to grow the business, which I had to think about both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
How are you currently utilizing, like, since you at Staud, like, how are you currently using like influencers and tastemakers there?
We're kind of just dabbling actually into the kind of creator community. I just started there about a year ago. And before that, they really didn't have like a huge marketing team. It was impressive. They were running a really tight ship and they've been really focused on growing their direct-to-consumer business over the last year, which is why I came on board. And so I think our approach has really been to try and find like relatively niche content creators to collaborate with, like truly collaborate on content with, that feels really style driven and approachable and accessible, but also has like a really nice just overall sort of elevated styling aesthetic. I think, you know, Staud is an incredible quality and but also an incredible price point. And so we try to convey that through our styling and who we choose to collaborate with on content. We've also seen just an incredible amount of organic content created by our community and our customers. We have a couple of like just really key winning products that customers love. And we've gone viral on TikTok, viral for us at least, viral on TikTok a couple of times. And we just see that those products just like take off every time we launch them, which is so exciting. I mean, so many brands see that happen, but I think we're trying to really nurture that organic piece and outreach to them and really listen to our community and engage with them when they are kind of giving us back a lot of good information or exciting content or insights.
I mean, the community part of, especially in like the fashion and beauty industry, is so big because it becomes like, what are your top three brands? And you want to be like one of those people's top three brands for a lot of time. Cause like every day, I feel like when I ask my wife, like some brands have stayed for like 5 years since I've been with her. And then some brands have like teetered in and out. And it's just like, you want to continue to be like that top three or top one brand that someone, when they say, when I go for an outfit, here's like the one brand I go through. And you have to be part of that list all the time and figure out how to stay relevant with those people.
I think that that community listening piece is so like it can't be under it's not underrated. I remember one of the first like amazing examples of like community listening, community management, social listening, whatever you want to call it, Glossier forever ago. I don't know. It has to be at least 5 or 6 years ago. They were just at their peak and customers kept commenting everywhere, Twitter, the time Twitter, Instagram, whatever. We want mascara. We need mascara. We love everything that you do. When are you making a mascara? And eventually they created a whole campaign with comments of customers asking for mascara. And they were like, guess what's launching? Mascara. And it was just like such a perfect example of how they harnessed the demand and social listen from their community to then using all of those words from their community in their marketing campaign and then giving them a product that they were already excited about. And I vividly remember it. And I really loved that so much. I thought it was so impactful. And I've kind of carried that with me.
It's also great when marketing can impact product. I think that's also, I think a lot of time it's like, hey, we're producing a product, marketing, figure it out. But if you can have that full cycle of, hey, our customers really want mascara. Here are thousands and thousands of comments that people are saying this, like, we got to make a product and figure out to make a great product with this. And then marketing's taking that to product development and it comes full cycle. I think that's when products really thrive because then you're staying relevant. You're listening to your community sees that you're listening. But if you're just creating products, which some brands can do because they've been around for years and years, but not many brands can do that. So they have to stay relevant with their community all the time.
Yeah.
Want to take your brand marketing to the next level? With Artlist, you can. Artlist is the ultimate destination to get inspired and create amazing videos using cutting edge tools. Choose from over 400,000 royalty-free premium assets, including the best music, sound effects, stock footage, templates, and more. Artlist's powerful digital assets and video editing software are perfect for marketing departments, creative teams, agencies, and app developers. Visit artlist.io to get started. I want to go into the bad side of it. What brands would you say, I wouldn't say like are doing terrible, but didn't do the best job when launching like tastemaker, celebrity, influencer brands?
There's a specific brand that I have in mind as I'm talking about this. I think product is just because a person is liked or influential in a community or a celebrity doesn't necessarily mean that the quality of their product is going to be superior. I think there was a lot of like influencer brands over the last, I would say probably 8 years, that launched, got a little big too quickly, went into wholesale doors, were invested in from like VCP, et cetera, and really like took a nosedive when people started realizing the quality of the product, especially as they scaled and grew, again, probably too quickly than they were ready for. And their brands don't exist anymore. This has happened in skincare and beauty. It's happened in fashion. It's happened all over the place. And so I think the idea around product development and like quality testing and sourcing, all of those things are so critical to making sure that whatever you're promising or the vision and the feeling and the aesthetic and the style that you want customers to feel from your product or your campaigns, when they actually physically get whatever you're selling them, and it's tangible for the first time, it has to like live up to all of that hype. And there's a lot of brands that haven't done that.
Or I know a brand that I'm thinking of that like the tastemaker is like a very luxury person. Like you see them in really life that they're luxury, but their brand comes out and it's like supposed to serve like the mass market, and the people who have bought from this person buy because they like her, his ideas of their luxury opinion. And you have to be very true. Like you said, going back to what you said in the beginning, if you have to be really true to your mission and your drive, and also like the celebrity's mission and stuff like that. Like Katie Walsh, I talked to her, she was at our event, but like with how Selena Gomez has like the Rare Foundation, and she's really true with the Rare. She actually is really passionate about it, and that's like one of the biggest drivers that they care about in the company. It's just cool to see that like that's a huge like mission of like the company, that they want to do that, and that's what's making the brand even more and more successful because of that. But then there's brands who like, oh, the celebrity wears eyeliner a lot in public, maybe we should just create an eyeliner brand.
Sometimes it's not even as deep as that. It's like, oh, this person has 2.5 million, 10 million followers. And then that's kind of where it starts and stops. And then they build their manufacturer, a brand around them, which is maybe going to work sometimes, but it's going to take a lot of effort to keep that sustainable.
You have to figure out how to scale beyond the celebrity. And like, yeah, some people are going to love the product and be connected to the celebrity because, let's say, the celebrity does that, whatever the product does a lot, or wears that type of stuff a lot. But you have to get to the point of, okay, if someone doesn't know the celebrity, would they still wear that lipstick, or would they wear that eyeliner, or wear that shirt, or wear those pants? Otherwise, you're just trying to scale. That means the celebrity has to scale the audience as fast as you want to scale the brand, because otherwise you're not going to be able to scale. You got to have a great product and great marketing and great branding to make sure you can stand out even when the celebrity isn't there. Like even with influencer marketing now, like even with, like you have to be able to, being in the creator myself, like you got to figure out how to make your product so good that people want to share it. And even if they don't know who the creator is or the expert is in the industry, they will still love the content they're putting out, or X, Y, and Z. So you got to figure out how to go beyond what the celebrity is and make a great brand and product that stands on itself as well.
Yeah, that connection piece. Like we met because I love your newsletter.
And I just like posted a roundup of newsletters I love on LinkedIn. And you're like, hey, we love you too. Let's meet. And so the connection piece can't be, it just has to be at the forefront, I feel like, of everything you do, because the connection with your customer, your community, your founder, your internal business partners, whoever might end up receiving your content or product or whatever, it's so critical to success.
And you probably have seen like the celebrities who actually really care about the brand, or the celebrities who just are there because they got pitched by their manager or something that this was a great idea and they just did it. There's like those two sides of it where it's like, hey, the celebrities actually wants to create a great makeup brand. Like they're passionate about makeup. They want to disrupt the industry in some way, like Ariana did it. But then there's the other people who are just, you could tell that there was no connection with, they just wanted to get a face. They had a lot of money to put into it. They hired a great person to try run the market, but they were promised a bag that wasn't really the bag that they were going, or they didn't know that they had to be involved that much with the product. So they started slowly fizzling out the brand, and it made it hard for the marketing team to actually do anything because they couldn't get a photo shoot done. They couldn't get a campaign done because the celebrity wouldn't do anything.
That's classic. Oh, I have to do four shoots a year? What do you mean? Yeah, classic occurrence from a celebrity run brand. Yes.
One thing you're really passionate about is the team and the org that makes the brand. Could you talk a little bit about like the importance of the team and the organization, of how you think that is a key part to making marketing successful?
I had the opportunity at Savage to build like a really incredible growth org across a couple of different verticals. And it's definitely probably my most treasured team that I've built. And they're so smart and dynamic and interesting. And I learned so many things from them. But I think the element of like having vertical experts is so important to having like a really rich team that can really deeply fight for and excel in their individual sort of spaces, but having people that are curious to kind of outreach into other departments or other verticals to be able to collaborate on strategy is such an important aspect of someone's character. I was so like focused on making sure my team was really diverse in like every sense of the word, from their DISC profile, their zodiac signs, their all of those different kinds of things. And I did a lot of different team building offsites and things like that. And we had this really incredible team of people that just kind of were all very different, but worked really seamlessly together. And I think that when you can create a team that can harmonize like that, and everyone has different perspectives, but ultimately they're fighting for the same goal, you just end up with like really incredible results. It's amazing when teams hire people for jobs and then let them do those jobs. I find it to be such a hot miss, super hot miss, when an org or a leader hires people and then just like micromanages them into the ground, and instead of letting them really shine and grow and show what they can do. And I think my biggest joys in my career is helping people grow and watching them grow, and whether it's from afar or on my team, and creating teams that are really successful and passionate and excellent at what they do.
The thoughtfulness of how you just said that is the amazing part, because I do think that wherever you are, you need to have those different perspectives, those different opinions, the different skill sets, those different personalities, those different backgrounds, to make sure that you're just staying. There's so many good ideas in the room. I think a lot of the time, if you get a lot of sameness in the room, there's a lot of same ideas. There's not new things. And you also could be very tone deaf to the community and the world when you have a sameness in the team, when you have a bunch of different opinions coming from different backgrounds or ages or whatever. You're going to get so many different cool things that come. And ultimately, when you have that mission at the end, like, you know, if they actually fight for that mission or the goal, and you know that's why they're making the decision, you know that, like, they're doing what's best for what they think is best, not because they care about what their opinion is at the end of the day. They care about, they want to do what's best for the brand.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the leader, too. I think that's the point, too. I think the leader has to be the one, like, they want to do best for the leader that they're working for as well.
Yeah.
What is a marketing hill you would die on?
If you can't look at, like, a Shopify sales report and know that that order is actually coming from a human being, you need to, like, figure out why you're selling things. And you need to, like, kind of dig deep in any role at any company. If you're a designer, if you're a graphic designer, if you're a marketer, if you're a salesperson, there's a human that's buying whatever you're selling, whether it's a service or a good. And if you're just looking at AOVs and UPTs and overall sales volume and conversion rate and so on and so forth, and you're not viewing all of those results and behaviors of being actual human beings, being from actual human beings, you're really just kind of missing the mark.
I think that's 10 out of 10 answer, because I think so many times marketers get caught up in that person's just a number in their system, mm-hmm. or they're just an order, or they're just a lead, or they just say, but you do, like, it's a potential customer or human that is willing to fork over their business money, their hard-earned money to work with you. And they also, like, you also have to understand why they want to do that and what was their motivation to do that. And I think so many times we get caught up in, oh, we got 122 sales today. But instead of saying, like, who are these 122 customers that came in that forked over their money to buy their product? What are those products that they love? Why did they buy those products? I think that's where, and even calling them, like, orders is, like, it's like an internal thing. Instead of calling them orders, you have to, like, change the terminology inside, even though, like, everybody understands orders, you got to change the terminology inside your company to be like, these are, like, whatever you call your customers. Like for me, we call marketing besties, like, another marketing bestie just subscribe. Like, we could just say there's a subscriber, like, oh, he just got another subscriber. Or we could say, like, these are, I'm another marketing bestie that's part of our community that we love. Like, if you have that feeling inside, you can, it makes it way easier. And it has to start internally to be able to do that.
Yeah, there's humanity.
It's funny because most companies I work for just talk about numbers. And even if you bring up something about, like, maybe we should change the way we think about this, about, like, thinking they're humans, it's like they still go back to, like, talking about, like, numbers on a chart. So it's funny.
Yeah.
But lastly, I want to ask a question about, I had said that was the last question, but I want to ask, if you were starting marketing again, what advice would you give to yourself as a young marketer starting in marketing?
Read every single day. I get so many ideas. This actually might have been from your newsletter. I don't remember, but I read something recently that really resonated with me, which was, if you're just kind of constantly absorbing content and information and reading about whatever topic, it could be a book, like a regular book, or, you know, a marketing newsletter or a newsletter that you're interested in your industry or whatever, it's going to just stay so present in your short-term memory and in your brain that, like, when you're brainstorming, when you're ideating, when you need to come up with an idea for a campaign, you're going to have so much to access that it's going to just like naturally come quicker. And so I set aside time to read every day, try to start in the first thing in the morning. Sometimes even before I get out of bed, I'll read all my emails, all my newsletters for like an hour. I end the day with reading something. Usually it's a book not related to work. And I think that the more interested and curious that you can be in various topics, it'll just help you become a more well-rounded human and understand people better, from the people on your team to your customers, your friends, family. And I think that it's been so impactful for me to be able to just have conversations, share information with team members, get them thinking and excited about ideas or new tools or things that I've seen on the internet or whatever. So I would encourage everyone to find a practice and content that they love absorbing and make it a real practice every day.
Yeah, I always say that you need the dots to be able to connect them. And the original idea is usually just two obsolete dots that you haven't connected yet. And a lot of the good ideas are like taking something from one industry and something you know about marketing and just bringing it to life in your own cool way. But you don't have the dots if you're not doing what you're saying, consuming. Ideas just don't come. Like even like you could go back to any invention in the world, like there was two dots that people thought about that like
totally.
that they connected and they came up with a new idea. It wasn't like there's no really original idea out there. It's just original ideas that came together to make a new original idea.
It's like observing also problems. You're just like observing what people are having a challenge with and then creating solutions to solve them.
Where could people find you and what you're doing?
Oh, hit me up on LinkedIn, Stephanie, Steph O'Sullivan. You can email me, DM me on LinkedIn, and I will be happy to chat.
Yeah, everybody go look at Stott and what they're doing. Go follow Stephanie. And thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate your time and taking time out of your day to be on the podcast.
Thank you. It was a treat. It was really nice meeting you.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in next week to hear more great insights from marketing's coolest operators. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to the Marketing Millennials podcast and giving it a 5-star rating. It helps bring more marketers into our community.